Hey guys, this is Matt Norlander, co-host of the Eye on College Basketball podcast with Gary Parrish. We are part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, and College Hoops is turning toward what's going to be a phenomenal March. So be sure you are tuned into the show. We're going to be publishing at least four shows every week. Follow and listen to Eye on College Basketball free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. March is coming.
It is unfortunate that we have a Browns defense that is playing at such a high level this year, and the offense just isn't even able to be like league average to take advantage of it. I feel bad for Myles Garrett and the rest of the defense with how they're playing.
Tayshia, I want to actually start with you on the offensive line for the Browns, because it has just been really bad, and I think it might actually end up getting worse as they're getting ready to start yet another starting unit. Talk to me just about how bad this offensive line actually is and where they stack up in the current landscape of the National Football League.
Yeah, the offensive line play for the Browns has been poor this year, as anyone can see that's watching these games. You know, I think like when you look at what Andrew Berry and this Browns front office prioritizes, they have done a really good job in so many other areas, especially on different position groups in defense. For some reason, they just don't seem to put a lot of resources into offensive line and offensive tackle specifically since their splurge a couple of years ago, where they were able to get Baker Mayfield really comfortable in the pocket. But like since then, it just hasn't been a lot of resources dedicated to the offensive line. I think we're just seeing the results of that, coupled with just bad injury luck in general, too.
Yeah, I think about that often, just because when Baker was here, and obviously Nick Chubb was the running back, and that helps, and it makes everyone look better in the process, but it legitimately was a top three offensive line in the sport, and it felt like many of their answers, Tage, was, well, we're not going to draft a lot of guys. They did draft some, obviously. DeJuan Jones has been drafted, and you know, we had a lot of conversations with other like left tackles that are gone now, but like for the most part, they didn't really draft too much. But they spent a lot of money. Like, Jack Conklin's a lot of money. Wyatt Teller's a lot of money. Very good player, a lot of money, though. And then even on the inside with Joe Bitonio, too. And it's just like, it didn't feel like they were half-assing it. But you got to a spot now where everybody is on their contract ending, and they're all really old, and it happened quick.
Yep, I do think that Cleveland put a lot of resources into kind of maximizing that 2020 to 2023 window. And then when you just don't have first and second round draft picks for as many years as they did, you can start to see the repercussions of that with the offensive line getting old and towards the end of the contracts. Like you said there, you know, you have the two first round picks and you have a lot of other draft capital to work with this offseason. And the issues on this team are very clear right now, you know, on the offensive side. So I think we end up seeing Cleveland dedicate a lot of resources towards fixing the offensive line, getting another receiver, and probably going into some sort of quarterback market as well.
When you look at the offense, what would you identify, Tayshia, as like the biggest spot of need? Like, is it quarterback? Is it offensive line? Is it wide receiver? Obviously, they need help in all of those spots. But if you were Andrew Berry, like, how are you attacking this thing? Because they do have a lot of needs.
For sure. And I do think it always starts with the quarterback. You know, there's so many cases around the league of teams drafting quarterbacks in the top five and being able to just flip the trajectory of their franchise. You saw it with C.J. Stroud in Houston. You saw it with Jaden Daniels in Washington and now Drake May in New England. And there are going to be quarterbacks that are viable starters in this draft coming up here with Mendoza, Ty Simpson, and Dante Moore if he ends up declaring. So I do think it starts there. And then after that, you know, it's some sort of version of trying to just put resources into offensive tackle and wide receiver. You know, you nailed both the Fannin and Judkins six, and I think you can feel really excited about what those are going to do for you. And so building around those two players on offense is going to be really important this offseason.
Hey, Seth, Sumer Sports joining us here on The Fan. And listen, it's just, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't think they intended to be as good as they are defensively while being as poor as they are offensively. I feel like they develop guys on the defensive side of the ball, and so it's all come together nicely where they just aren't able to do that on the offensive side of the ball. They put resources on both sides, though. But like, what does it tell you when a team ends up this lopsided, championship-level defense, and on the offensive side of the ball, the complete opposite?
Yeah, I mean, part of it's just the natural variance of football, you know, with how hard it is to predict how players are going to do year to year. But I also think there's something with this front office and their plan of like the next couple of years of, we know that defense is pretty unstable year to year. Like we've seen it with the Browns, right? Where 2 years ago, they were awesome. Last year, they struggled a bit. Now they're back to being really good again. And then offense is just more stable year to year. And you know, a function of that is you end up having to pay offensive players more than defensive players. And so I think when we saw like what they did in the draft, going and getting Mason Graham and Schlossinger in the first two rounds, they kind of want to just build a defense that they can feel will have a top half talent in the league, while it varies in terms of rankings. Well, the offense will be a longer project to kind of build.
Hey, everyone. I'm Josh Radner, and I am so excited to tell you about How We Made Your Mother, a rewatch podcast looking back at How I Met Your Mother. And I'm here with Craig Thomas, who co-created the show along with Carter Bays. Hi, Craig.
Hey, Josh. Somehow it has been 20 years since the show premiered. I'm going to check the math on that. 10 years since it went off the air. And we thought that made this a perfect time to look back, see what the hell we did, and why the show still seems to resonate with fans around the world today.
Follow and listen to How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.
Hold up all of that, but I mean, some of these players on defense would like just have like come out of nowhere with how well they're playing. Like Alex Wright has been really impressive this year. Devin Bush has been like a very nice surprise. Even Ronnie Hickman, I think, has mm-hmm. played well at times as well. Like I've just been like really impressed by the way that this defense has come together, and I think it's a great job by the front office and Jim Schwartz to put it all together.
When you look at what Myles Garrett is doing right now, you know, the historic adjective continues to get thrown around, but just how remarkable is what Myles Garrett is doing for the Browns defense week in and week out?
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the most amazing things in all of football to see what Myles Garrett does every week for this team. You look at the fact that he's double teamed on the edge almost more than anyone, but he also leads the league in sacks. He's top five in pressure rate. It's just like super special to see what he's doing. And the thing that I think is like elite about Myles Garrett is not only does he get pressure on the quarterback often, the quickness that he gets to the quarterback to get these pressures and just like fold some of these like, you know, plays that are supposed to be like screens or slants and you know, quick hitter plays like that. Like, it's just like amazing to watch him every Sunday.
All right. What are the expectations for Shador this weekend against a pretty bad Titans team?
Yeah, I think the Shador, you know, the two starts have been pretty interesting to analyze, because the main thing I was worried about with him, as someone who was a big fan of him in college, was his sack rate. I was really worried he'd come out there and it'd look a lot like the Ravens game, where he was just like taking sacks all over the place. He hasn't been awful in that department, so that's good to see. You know, you've seen the big plays as well occasionally happen, which have been really nice. And that's definitely not something you saw with Dylan Gabriel. So I just want to see like his pocket management continue to improve. And then if he can kind of just get the successful plays down to down, can you just take the 5-6 yard throws, you know, that are available to you, instead of just like, you know, going like boom or bust like he's been in his first two starts?
Tej, I know it's still a little bit early here. Obviously, the Browns have 5 regular season games remaining. Maybe Shador Sanders can pop over those next 5 games. But looking at the college ranks, any of these quarterbacks kind of stand out to you more than the rest?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that Fernando Mendoza, who we'll learn a lot about tomorrow, I think he's like the clear QB1 in this class as of right now. Like the way that he's able to read defenses, to deliver accurate passes. The final drive against Penn State was just like amazing to watch, you know, just to see how he was so poised in the pocket there. Like, I think he's played really well this year and definitely deserves a lot of looks in the top 3, top 5 of the draft. Ty Simpson's another interesting quarterback. He's clearly very talented, but he's shorter. So, you know, I think that's going to be an issue. And his last month of play hasn't looked as good. Dante Moore is going to be the intriguing option to me if he ends up declaring in the draft. Like he has so many tools. You know, like he's done like a really good job running the Oregon offense this year. He can, any area of the field is available to him. So I wonder, like, you know, if he ends up declaring for the draft, where he'll end up going. But I think it end up might being pretty high based on what people have said so far.
Tej, there are so many great games this weekend on the slate. I want to ask you about the Steelers and the Ravens game, though, because it seems like right now, I mean, Aaron Rodgers isn't throwing the ball deep. That's real concerning. Lamar Jackson came back to practice today, but he'd been injured the past couple days. He has not been himself either, by the way. Bottom four in EPA over the previous 4-week stretch. It's a weird quarterback matchup when you think Lamar versus Aaron Rodgers should be fireworks, and right now I don't know that it will be.
Yeah, I know. It is pretty crazy to hear the two names of these quarterbacks and just not expect many points in this game. You mentioned Aaron Rodgers not throwing deep at all. I think something that I'll keep my eye on in this game is since week six, since the Ravens moved Kyle Hamilton from being a free safety away from the ball to more close to the line of scrimmage and playing in the slot more. The Ravens have been really good at stopping short passes, which is basically the entire Steelers offense this year. So maybe Rodgers actually musters up the strength to throw deep, or it's kind of just more of the same for the Steelers offense. And then for the Ravens offense, yeah, it's a weird Lamar situation right now where he didn't look healthy when he came back from his injury. And I was kind of just going through the motions. And then he looked healthier these past couple of weeks, just keeps turning the ball over and not playing particularly well. So it feels like the Ravens offense is talented enough to find their groove eventually, but it's more of a wait and see for them right now than having a lot of confidence in that actually happening.
All right, Tej, fantastic stuff. Obviously everyone go subscribe to the newsletter over there at Sumer Sports. I've been doing it for, I think you guys started at the beginning of the year, right?
Yep. Yeah, I did it at the beginning of the year.
I was going to give you a couple years beyond that. And I'm no, I think it's been a 1-year thing, but I check it every Thursday. I check it every Monday when you send off the recaps and everything. I do love it. Thank you, Tej.
Yeah, appreciate it, guys. Good talking.
Good stuff right there. Tej Seth, as always, on the Fan Hotline.
Hi, I'm PJ Vogt, and I want to tell you about my podcast, Search Engine. We try to make sense of the world, one question at a time. No question too big, no question too small. We will even answer your questions if you send them in. Stuff like, what happens when a cemetery goes out of business? What should we do about teens using AI to do their homework? Who buys luggage at the airport luggage store? Follow and listen to Search Engine in partnership with Odyssey wherever you get your podcasts.